Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? I'm coming to you from my house. Everyone's at Everyone's at a house right now, except for Kato, who's the only one at work. So kudos to Kato.
That's not everyone.
That's not everyone.
That's not everyone.
I realized I was wrong already. All right, let's start this over.
Now we're keeping this.
What's good, internet?
Nope.
I'm here to talk to y'all about a game I played the other day that I'm really, really excited about, and I wanted to talk to my two
experts,
confidants in all things Souls-like, Austin Walker.
Hey, it's me. I'm a confidant and a coach.
Yes, you are. And Patrick Klepek.
I hit the buttons and occasionally they do something.
Okay, I think you're selling yourself a little bit short there, but... Sure.
That's my life.
We're here to talk about From Software's latest Sekiro, Shadows Die Twice?
Two times.
I wish it was a question mark. I wish there was a studio bold enough to do the subtitle in which they're just not sure. Or they're just raising the question.
Shadows Die Twice?
Perhaps.
Who could say? They?
You'll find out. Play our game. That's honestly a good
Do Shadows Die Twice is a great name for a fucking game.
That is a really great
name.
How
many video games that aren't like some sort of mystery noir
have
a question mark? Can you even think of one?
Games with question marks in their titles.
Oh, you're saying this as you type this into a Google
search.
Yeah,
of course. Yeah.
I don't think I can think of a single one. I can't think of one that has punctuation.
Here we go.
Punch out.
Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego?
That doesn't count.
Why?
Because it's a mystery. Like something that's already sort of aware. Like I feel like is you know like Shadows Die Twice. You know, like
we're looking for more existential questions.
Yeah. Well, this is the same thing. This is Adventure Time. Hey, Ice King, why'd you steal our garbage? Which is funny.
That's better. That's closer. It's closer.
Yeah. I don't see anything that's really good that is like that fits the mold we're talking about here.
This is something we're missing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's stuff in other genre and other media for sure.
Movies do it all the time.
There's a movie with a question mark.
Uh-huh. For sure. Definitely.
I don't know it.
Dude, where's my car?
Dude, where's my... Thank you.
For instance, is Paris burning? You know? Like, there are definitely... What's New Pussycat? I'm looking at a list of these now. There's a lot of, like, what's and who's, you know? Who framed Roger Rabbit?
Ooh, great one.
Et cetera, you know? A lot of those.
Totally. But today, we're talking about a video game, and that video game does not have a question mark in it. And I got the chance to go and preview the game a couple weeks ago, and there was like a little Q&A session with one of the marketing directors, I think, from Japan.
It's probably the same guy that you and I met at E3 last year.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Austin, I think it's like
how,
the same
how
person.
How cool was he?
He's very cool.
All right, yeah. Same guy.
Extremely cool. Extremely cool. he did like a presentation first, and then there was a little Q&A section. Of course, I asked a question because I'm that person.
Don't apologize. Most of those.
No.
I didn't say sorry.
Okay. There was a little hesitation there.
You
as
were
though
like,
there was a mild embarrassment that you asked a question.
Uh-huh.
I was a little embarrassed.
It's okay to be nervous and like there's a difference between embarrassment over you asking a question in front of a group of people and embarrassment because like you asked a question at all.
Curiosity, because I'm what's that inside person. The cube? Curiosity, what's inside movie? The cube is a game.
Oh, it's a game.
That was the Peter Molyneux game. Curiosity.
That had a subtitle?
What's inside the cube was the subtitle. Sorry.
That's
sorry.
Not what was on my iOS app. That just said curiosity.
Okay. Yeah, listen, I had to.
No, I had fair.
You know.
I'm glad we got to the bottom of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you ask questions, which is the right thing. I'm with Patrick.
I like to ask questions. I asked about lore, of course, because it's me.
Wait, what did you ask about lore?
I asked, my question was, so in the past, these games have been, you know, From Software, these Souls, like in the Souls franchise and the Souls universe or whatever, these games mm-hmm. have been mostly about what is happening in the world. Like the plot line mainly follows environmental change. And it is like, that's where the crux is. And the effects are sort of like peripheral, the effects on characters. And so my question is, it seems to be a much more character-driven story. So I was curious as to, you know, does most of the lore still live in the environment like they right. have in the past? Like, does most of the lore live in items? Does most of it live in you know, in just what you see around you? Or are there more sort of like interaction-based narratives that are being told here.
Like dialogue-driven in some cases, right?
Yeah,
like
exactly.
In the footage you watch, like the language is straightforward.
For the most part. Yeah.
But relative to the writing in From Software games in the past,
yes.
it is straightforward.
Especially at the beginning, where it's like,
it establishes like characters, motivations,
yes.
Interests, like potential arcs. Like I'm so curious about that part of the game, which like mm-hmm. Natalie, your question touches on something like I'm just like deeply fascinated for how the whole game is going to handle that
totally.
Because it is a stark difference from
yeah.
just the whole arc of From Software when they were doing King's Field and like
yeah.
just how they've done storytelling in their like games that like kind of play with obfuscation. This
yeah.
is a game that like in a lot of ways seems like it wants to do like normal is not the word, but at least in mm-hmm. terms of how it's telling that story, at least up front, it seems like it's a little more, it does seem a little more normal of what you expect as opposed to lots of enemies just like
mm-hmm.
weirdly cackling.
Yeah.
Although did you see it? Were there any cackles? Were there laughs? Any
characters
laughing?
There's a sequence I saw. Oh, maybe there aren't. Natalie, are there any laughs or cackles?
There's some like,
That's close.
Like some of that, but
okay.
not as many like sort of haha, I know something that you do not cackles
mm-hmm.
that we like have come to know and love hate about.
I love them.
Yes. Learn to love is definitely right. I mean, even mm-hmm. like the voice acting is like more. No,
I mean,
you know what I mean? Like, it's more like what you expect from voice acting, as opposed to like often in the Souls or Bloodborne games, there's someone like, like, there's everything is just some sort of like exaggerated setup. Which is fine, it works in the world, but clearly, this is a different type of world, which maybe part of that is like on a base level, there are just more humans in this world.
I mean, what's significant here that we're kind of going around is the fact that you aren't making a character.
Right.
The character is already is exists in this world.
Can you
world.
Set him up for us a little bit?
Yeah.
Like what the intro is to the without. I mean, I guess we should say right now there are going to be light spoilers about the beginning of this game. You played the beginning mm-hmm. of this game in the first like few hours of it.
Yeah, I played like the first 2 hours.
Let's just like I would say like we're not going to talk about like particular story beats, but
mm-hmm.
we're going to talk about like what the premise of the game is.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
So there is the main character, Sekiro, or Sekiro.
Which means like wolf?
It means, Seki is derived from Sekiwan, which means one-armed.
Okay.
And Ro, which means wolf.
Got you, one-armed wolf. Yeah, okay,
yeah.
That makes sense.
Uh-huh. Sekiro is a sort of like he is kind of a warden of a young lord, and he's a ninja. He's like extremely physically capable and skilled in like sort of the art of ninja. And he's kind of reserved. You don't know a lot about him. I honestly can't tell you much about him. I don't really know much about him.
There's a good, there's that cool sequence early on where he's like recruited by the master ninja who catches him like robbing a bank. Because it's like, it's a post-war game, not post-World War II, which is what we normally mean when we say post-war. Mm-hmm. It takes place after the Sengoku era, the Warring States period of Japan, where like a billion different, not a billion, but like hundreds of different warlords and, you know, clan leaders are battling over, you know, border lines and who is really in control of the nation, and people are putting their support and their clan support behind various leaders. And it seems like we're post-war. Wolf is like recruited by his master shinobi guy, whose name I did not catch, as he's like looting the corpses of the dead. Yes. And then it's like a big jump forward in time.
I believe his name is Hirata.
Oh, is that dude's name Hirata? Okay.
I think that commander is Hirata.
Okay.
I believe. I could be wrong. Again, like there's not a lot of reference material because the game hasn't come out yet.
And we don't have it. You can't like go into the pause menu and be like, yeah, what's this guy?
Yeah, exactly. So the fact that the game is centered around the specific character who's already written and who exists in this world and has existed.
And who has a voice. That was the one that was the wildest thing for me. Like,
yes.
Speaks to people, doesn't just listen.
Yeah. And there is agency in that. Like there are allusions to the idea that there will be an effect from you know, deciding where that voice goes.
I don't think it's David Hayter, but there is a Metal Gear. It's not David Hayter, but there is such a Metal Gear quality sometimes when he'll be like, shinobi prosthetic. You know, shinobi tools. Someone will say like, oh, you need to get the, bring me back the shinobi tools and I'll add it to your cool arm. And he'll be like, my cool arm.
That sounds so similar. This is completely an aside, but like when I worked at G4, and also I'm sure you've done some video works and some of this happens too, but like when you interview somebody and you ask them a question to make, so when it gets edited, you like if it's not just going to be the interview is just dumped from A to Z.
Yeah.
You, especially when you're doing talking heads where you're not on camera, where you're just like putting a microphone in front of somebody, like you tell them, and good, like executives know to do this and you don't have to like tell them because they do this for like financial channels and stuff all the time. But like you have to tell them like, I need you to rephrase the question in your answer. When is Super Mario coming out? And you say, Super Mario is coming out. And it's like, that's just so funny because like that just reminds me like flashbacks to all the times I did interviews for G4 where I had to like stop an interview halfway and be like, ah, shit, you have not been setting up any of the questions and the answers. You're going to have to answer that again and also set up my question.
Right. You can't just say July 3rd. You can't just say it'll let you fight enemies better. You have to say shinobi tools will let you fight enemies better.
That's a good point, is that he is specifically a shinobi. Which is a specific like class or type of ninja.
I think you're playing. So the thing is, like, I mentioned this the other day. Actually, remember on the Monday podcast, I was like, when I was a kid, I would go through phases where I was like deep into some shit,
and like one of the phases I was deep into
was, well, it was more of like a historical Japan phase. It was like, oh, wow, I want to learn everything I can about the Sengoku period or the Heian period, like these very various periods of Japanese history, the rise of the samurai class, the end of the samurai class. And like the truth about ninja and shinobi is like, there's a lot we don't fucking know. There's like some stuff that we know. We know that in these periods of time, especially during the Warring States period, the Sengoku period, that like – rich warlords had assassins and thieves who worked for them, who got their fucking hands dirty and who were willing to do shit that other people were not willing to do. And that were like dishonorable things. But pop culture plays fast and loose with that. Like from what I saw in this, like this is playing up the shinobi as almost being more honorable than other people. Like it's very early on when it's like the shinobi code and like you have loyalty to me as your master and then to the young lord after that. And that is like, that is, it's a take. It's like, I don't have a judgment on this because shinobi and ninja have become a sort of blackboard onto which you can write a lot of different interpretations. And so it's neat to see from – in the same way that knight has, right? Knights have been represented as like chivalrous and honor and honorable or backwards and greedy, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but it's cool to see them play with it in this way because they do it in a very evocative way.
Yeah. Totally. It makes me so curious to learn more about, you know, who are the other shinobi? Like what does it take to like become like of this class and sort of like what are the undertakings that entails?
Right.
So I'm already sort of like deeply here for this sort of character-driven narrative. Because I'm excited about that. I'm excited that this game does feel like a departure from the formula that FromSoft has set up with the Souls trilogy and Bloodborne. Like this is a new setting, that it's not some like kind of fantastical Europe. Mm-hmm. The fact that characters, the protagonist is named and can speak, all of these things have me so pumped for the storytelling potential.
You're not going to miss being big boy.
I mean, of course I am.
Or will we find out that they're not very good at this and that like a lot of what was happening in the Souls games was people filling in the gaps by them writing like obtuse sentences. There's also in the back of my mind, I also worry there's like another version of this.
Yes.
That's like, the audience was not that like clearly from full of tremendous ideas, great and interesting ideas of storytelling, but it's like a much on their part. Like I'm like you, Natalie, I am encouraged and excited to see what they do with it because they could certainly have just kept doing what they were doing, in which like what the audience was doing and what From was setting up was like a certain dance on purpose. Or even if it was something they stumbled into, like that became a purposeful way of doing storytelling as things went on. And this is just another kind of relationship with the audience. And I'm both nervous and curious as someone that I know the distance between Austin and I on this is vast. Whereas like I don't particularly care for the story in the Souls games because I didn't want to put in the effort of like reading the descriptions, taking notes, watching YouTube videos, and like Austin lives for that shit. And so, like, I'm curious, like, is this a game that, like, can, like split the difference a little bit more on that
stuff?
That's
what it feels like.
And make it a little more accessible to someone like myself and other people who, like, love the gameplay. Like, when I'm told about the story, I'm like, cool, that sounds cool as shit. Like, it'd just be kind of cool if it just, like, told me that sometimes, though.
This is making me want to do Dark Souls lore reasons so fucking bad.
That's
honestly? Oh,
One day, it's on the list.
It's on the list.
It is on the list.
Like the thing that I wanted to build on Patrick really quick, and I'm going to ask you a question with this, which is like it does feel from watching the gameplay, it felt like it did split the difference because there were characters who spoke and Sekiro spoke back to them and like that stuff is all there. And there's cutscenes at the top of the game that let you get an understanding of like what your objective is. A character says, go to the bottom of this place and there's a secret door. When you get there, blow this whistle and we'll move on. And then another dude shows up and you fight him. Like, and that stuff happens in a way that is very clear and very like straightforward. And there's eavesdropping where characters are, instead of like finding just item descriptions and hoping to, you know, do eavesdrop or hoping to piece together stuff that way, it's just like hit the square button when you're near some guards talking or whatever and you'll overhear them say some important shit. So like that feels like there is stuff there that's almost more like Hollow Knight maybe in terms of here's where the story is, here's a cutscene for you. But it did seem like there was still some weirdness around like item descriptions having a little bit of extra lore, stuff like that. And I guess I'm curious because you had a bunch of footage for us to look at.
But
I didn't watch all of it all the way through carefully. Do you think that those item descriptions are – as far as I know, there aren't weapons in the game besides your cool ninja tools. You're not like getting different swords. There's not like a gear selection the way there would be in Bloodborne or Dark Souls. You're not changing armor. You're not like equipping spears or like different classes of main weapon.
Not from what I did so far. Not in the way that, that Dark Souls did it. Right. What you get are like skills that you can equip, which are like different types of attacks, like a sort of your sword does like one of them, the one that I unlocked while I was playing was like a large sweeping motion that's more of like an AoE sort of thing that can work okay. for sort of multiple enemies. So it's that you're equipping. And your shinobi also has like a skill tree. So both your sort of like main weapon and your shinobi have two different skill trees that that contribute to this. It's what I will say is that the item descriptions are still important. It is not completely taking away from that. When I asked that question, they said things are still going to be obscure. Like things are still going to be like you are still going to want to pay attention. You're still going to want to read those things.
There was one that I really liked that I think was evocative without being about plot or lore was there's like the, you know how in Bloodborne you have rocks you can throw to get attention. You got like little pieces of ceramic in this shards. And the description of that is like, a piece of pottery that breaks with a satisfying crack when thrown, throw it at an enemy to draw their attention. It's like, okay, that's what it does. But then it said, throwing and smashing such pieces made for a popular sport amongst Ashina boys. Even after growing up, they remember the old games well. Which is like exactly some Dark Souls Bloodborne type shit. Because the suggestion isn't, oh yeah, they heard a sound and they want to go check it out. It's that you threw this thing that reminded them of their childhood. And that's like, huh, what's going on over there is like, has this nostalgic melancholy tinge to it. And like, yes, this is the thing that lifts their item descriptions above when I played something like Neo, and I liked Neo from what I played of it. Like, they didn't have that same feeling that the FromSoft stuff normally does.
Yeah, it adds characterization to that sort of curiosity. Like, why would someone be curious and not just paranoid?
Right.
Like, I think that's, you know, a trope that we've accepted about like noisemakers and, you know, Mark of the Ninja is like one that uses noisemakers to attract attention. And it's like specifically, something that's like, oh, what's over there? You know, you hear everyone react to it and it's already like on a fence. When you see the way that characters walk around to, they're not running towards the sound, they're kind of like slowly walking up to it, like with a little bit of hesitation, but more just so like, did I really just hear that, like was that a memory or
that's
something so that was really cool. I tried to you know, look at everything I could. I really spent the sort of 2 hours. It was funny because I was playing with like, you know, 20 other people, and it's such a weird feeling playing this game. I was like sitting across from someone who asked a bunch of like diehard soul fan questions where he was like, oh, well, will the mechanics of the combat being different from whatever?
Wow. Okay. Is that
I was like,
me?
I'm just,
what? Natalie's been to one event and she's already on her like complete fucking pro, like, wow, look down
guy,
your nose.
This guy that's a big fan of the series had questions about how it works.
Us, Natalie, we're about to talk about this.
You brought us on to be that person.
I know, and I see you both, and I appreciate you.
Yeah, okay.
But no, it was just the way that the person framed the question was like very much in like a, I'm not sure if other people will catch this, but I.
That's fair. That's a distinctly different sort
that's
of thing.
Different.
That
yeah.
like,
and then yeah, it yeah. was it was a lot, and then God, as they're
I
like,
I hope
playing,
that's someone we know and who's listening, Patrick. So bad, I hope we get a text from someone from like Kotaku or something who is like, "Hey, did Natalie drag me in front of all your listeners?" And I'll be like, "Yep."
Well, as they were playing, like with every sort of fight, they're like yelling and they're like, "Oh, are you kidding me?" And I was just like, "Yo, like,
That's
what, yeah. I was just like, I'm trying to play this game here. Like, y'all, you're coming out real strong, like drawing mad attention to yourself. I just trying to fucking explore the world, and you're like getting mad aggro across from me. But
I saw,
anyway.
I saw you hiding underneath the wood a lot.
Yeah, I was hiding a lot, mainly because I knew I wasn't going to be good yet. So right. Like my sort of like approach to this game, to this, like the amount of time I had with the game was like, I know I'm not going to like get through a lot of combat because I need time with the game to get through that. I'm not I'm not inherently good at these games. It takes time for me. And it's also a huge departure from the combat. Well, at least from the playstyle that I used. Yeah. The playstyle that I used in Bloodborne was like evade, attack, evade, you know, like just like not really, I didn't go for parries a lot. I wasn't super good at landing visceral attacks. But in Sekiro, you gotta parry. You absolutely gotta get that shit down. Otherwise, you're gonna be in a bad place. It's just you can't do it. You can't get through the majority of these like mid boss. I didn't get to like a major boss fight, so I can't speak to that. But
it does seem like you could do like the grunt enemies. You can kind of grind.
You
your
can
way
yeah
through.
The grunt enemies.
But
you
anytime
can just,
you get to anyone who needs a, what's it called, like a death like blow,
a death blow attack, yes. Or something like that. Yeah.
Yes. The thing about the sort of grunt enemies is, they're good to practice the parry on because they're only one death blow, right. Usually. So
can you explain what that means when you say death blow for people who haven't, like, there are any people who didn't listen to us talk about this game at E3 or previous preview events or whatever.
Yeah. So basically, the way it works is as you are, both you and your enemies have something called posture, and in order to achieve, this is like sort of the equivalent of a visceral attack. But in order to achieve a death blow, which does like a significant amount of damage and is also required. So that's a big part, is that death blows are required to defeat enemies. You have to break their posture in order to do this. The best way to break posture is by parrying. You can also break posture by just attacking, but these fights are very fast. There are some grunts and some characters that are slower than others, but for the most part, it is like ching, ching, ching. It's like not as like wind up sort of motions that you get in Bloodborne.
You don't get like the weird like zombie villagers who go like bah! And they like pull back and then swing slowly. It's
exactly
like even random enemies, just like random guards, are super, super, super fast in this. Once you're like, I saw you get like surrounded by two or three people sometimes. Like, these are people who one on one you'd have no problem with, but just having a second enemy on the screen is like, you're going to take some hits. You're not going to die necessarily, but you did get hit, you know?
Yeah, I got hit a lot. I died quite a few times. They were like, you're not going to want to die in this game. I was like, we'll see. And then, nope, you definitely don't want to die in this game, just like the other ones.
That was one of the big surprises was, I think, in our past coverage of it, Patrick and I kept talking about the resurrection mechanic, where you get a, when you die, after a certain point in the game, when you die, you can come back to life. Twice.
Yes.
You recharge one of those. You have two uses of that, one of which you can recharge by killing enemies, one of which you recharge by going to these Buddha statues, which are basically this game's
like
version of the
bonfires.
Or the stone gravestones or whatever. What are they? Oh, lanterns in
Lamps.
Bloodborne.
Yeah.
Lamps. And I think we both kept having this conversation with we kept trying to dig at it and be like, hey, does this make it easier, more accessible? Like, what is your goal with this? Because it seems like it would make it more accessible and you could just kind of brute force your way through and blah, blah, blah. From watching you play, and this is a mechanical spoiler, I'm going to say right now, like, we have to talk about some mechanics to talk about what you saw. And when you die, like after you've run out of your resurrections, it's counting how many times you die.
Yeah,
it is. The world changes based on that.
Yes.
And the moment that fucking happened in this in this video, I was like, oh, word.
It fucked me up. I was like, can I start over?
Like the whole like, game?
So I was like, can I just start from the absolute beginning?
Do you want me to tell you?
Yeah.
Or do you want me to give you
like, okay,
vaguely?
Yeah, vaguely.
Yeah, can I give you, here's my vague thing is, you know, white world and black world tendency from Demon's Souls.
Well, you should explain what that is.
Okay. In Demon's Souls.
I'm just saying, because like, a lot of people didn't play Demon's
Souls.
And if you played it after most people moved on, that didn't affect your ability to, it didn't affect you even, like I beat Demon's Souls and Light World, Dark World did not come into it because everyone had stopped playing it.
Sure, sure. So. And also, I want to be clear, okay, so I'm just going to say what it means in terms of fiction, I guess, if that makes sense. So the world in Demon's Souls changed based on certain key things, like when you killed a boss, the world got lighter. When you died to an invasion, I think the world got darker. And it made different enemies start to spawn. Like it changed.
Wasn't there like it worked on a meta level too, right? Like what player base was doing could tilt the balance.
Yes, totally. If you were online, there was like the world tendency. And so this is not world tendency in that respect, but things in the fictional world shift because the ability you have that lets you resurrect is drawing on the world. It didn't say like enemy spawns change, but there are definitely things that change very dramatically and very quickly. We can tell you, but like,
no, don't tell me.
I think you specifically, it's exactly the sort of thing that you don't want to get spoiled on.
That's the line. The line I want to go up to is knowing, because that is,
it'll fuck you up.
But that's just such a really smart way for, especially if you've been playing these games as long as like Austin and I have, and a lot of people who have played these games, where are they going to poke and push at the formula?
Yes.
And like, there's ways you do it in combat. Like this one is like, hey, look, you've been playing since Demon's Souls. Like we know this is, you could just kind of dodge and hit. And you could still to some degree do that even in Bloodborne, even as that game pushed you ever closer to more offensive combat and understanding parries, and this game is going to put that front and center. But even then, that little bit there of like the world changing based on events that are based on failure or whatever the case, like that is just a smart, exciting change, even if the response from you, all of us on this call, is going to be, oh, motherfucker, like, god damn it. Like, I had just gotten down the path, and now the path is going to change meaningfully enough that I can no longer safely go around the corner and assume I know how to dodge. Like, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Because that makes, that finds a new way to, where, especially if you play these games a number of times, the repetition at a certain point is no longer charming and can sometimes be grating in a way that, even though I like the, like, sprint to a boss on paper, at a certain level, I'm like, yeah. You know, like, it could actually sometimes be nice to just, like, let me play the boss again. So stuff like this, where the world is going to meaningfully change based on failure, is a really exciting idea.
The stuff there is like, I like in my notes so the beginning of my notes are like, it's so wild to see them do just a straightforward narrative introduction about key characters and events. It's still a little mysterious, but basically it's straightforward. And then if you go down my notes like 12, 13 lines, it's like, what the fuck is Dragon's Heritage? And then another thing is like the name of the thing I'm not telling you about. What the fuck? And then my final note on this is like, what the fuck is in that jar? And like, okay, it's still FromSoft, right?
Yes.
Like it's still FromSoft in that way. That character might do there's a thing associated with a jar that might do a creepy laugh now that I think about it.
Good.
It's they're still gonna pull the rug out from under you. Like completely, and in a way that is just completely unexpected. So
did you find yourself getting the parries down by the end?
It's hard because I got it down with like regular enemies. So what I was saying is that, you know, those death blows are requirements. So for certain enemies, they might require 3 death blows, 4 death blows. So it's not really based on health as much. Although the lower their health is, the harder it will be for them to regain posture.
Right. So they have like a health bar, like normal. Then they also
and
have
then
these
there's
two-
the gold posture bar at the top.
Right, which is almost like a stamina bar, but it takes the place, it's like right in the dead center of the top of the screen, right? For major enemies. For minor enemies, it's just above their heads. It's like you see their health bar, then right under their health bar is a posture bar. But it's in the top left corner is their health, and then their two little, like, or however many little circles, little orbs that are there, how many death blows you need to kill them. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, like, you can just hit them with your sword, which will shake their posture, and it will damage them. And I know from a past preview that you can also hurt them with these prosthetic tools that you get. Sekiro loses his arm and gets a prosthetic arm. We've talked about that in the previous episodes. And that arm ends up giving him, like, an axe or, like, a flamethrower at a certain point. Mm-hmm. And those can just straight up do damage. But if... I don't remember this. You're saying that, like, what happens is when their health goes down, what it does is it makes it easier to get them into, like, the stunned state that you need to do the death blow? Staggered, rather?
When their health goes down or when their posture goes down?
When their health goes down, it makes it easier to knock down, their posture down.
The rate at which their posture recovers is slower. Mm. So you can kind that of get sense. More hits in.
Yeah, without them healing their posture or recovering their posture.
Right. Which brings you closer to doing a death blow. Mm-hmm. So as soon as their posture is out, the next there's like a red orb that appears over their head that is the death blow. Or wait.
That seems right. Yeah, I think that's right.
I think so. Or you just attack them
regularly. Yeah, there's also the red kanji that you're thinking of, maybe. And the red kanji, like the red kanji is like character.
For death.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a warning symbol.
That is a warning symbol. That is like they're going to hit you with something that's unblockable.
Oh, yes. Yes. So that was actually... That was actually the question that the person asked was about the death symbol thing. It was like, what's the point? Like, is dodging still a thing? Like, are you going to still need to dodge if you can just parry everything? And then they were like, ha, 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 ha. You cannot parry anything.
The developer did one of the creepy laughs.
He didn't laugh, and he did smile. He was like, you can't parry everything. Exactly.
I mean, I had a similar question because, like, you look at a lot of the sort of, like, main combat, and it's a lot of just, like, standing square with someone, like, maybe dodging back, but, like, you know, hitting, parrying. Mm-hmm. And I did start to not worry, but wonder if you'd encounter different ways that the game, maybe even other than the blows that are unparryable, whether it's through enemy type or enemy behavior that, like, tries to break you out of just, like, you're going to get in a stance with an enemy until one of you goes down.
Yeah.
Like, I'm curious how you encountered that through your 2 hours with it.
Well, something significant is that there is a jump button. There is just a button to jump in a way that jumping is not a thing in the past. And so one of those death blows could be something like a sweeping sort of floor swipe.
Wait, when you say death blows at this way, you mean the unblockable?
Oh, I'm sorry. The unblockable, the kanji character death sort of signifier. It could be like a sweeping low attack. You gotta jump.
Right.
You gotta jump.
You gotta actually jump over it. You can't just block it. You can't just even back away from it.
You definitely can't block it. And you definitely can't go, like, side to side. You might be able to go backwards. Right. I got hit by it every single time, so I can't tell you. So the pacing of the you can also move around much more quickly. So if you're in a sticky situation, you can use verticality to your advantage and move away to higher structures, to other areas. You can, like, you can dip pretty easily.
You dip so often in this video. It's so fucking good. Where it's like, you know what? I gotta fucking go, actually. I have a grappling hook in my cool robot arm. Let me get the fuck out. Real quick.
Yep, I leave a lot. So that was kind of the thing I was saying earlier, is like, I went into this knowing that I was not going to be able, that I was not going to get the combat down so well that I was going to progress through sort of more harder, more like intense focused fights very easily. So I decided I want to see as much as I can. I'm just going to, if it's too hard, I'll leave. I'm not going to play the game this way when it comes out, but for the sake of getting the footage and for the sake of like getting to know this world, I'm just going to dip if I can't do it, which was fine for the footage, but also meant I was bad at the game because I wasn't learning anything.
Well, and also, but the game seems to recognize that you're going, you know, I was kind of jumping through the footage, so I wasn't always picking up exactly how the UI was responding. But like, there are moments where like the game is both, like there are like arrows on the screen that'll point to enemies that are aware of your presence. Is that only during like stealth sequences where you're trying to like hide? Or is that also where like, I'm in combat, I'm going to break away, and the game is going to kind of point at like where danger is potentially.
Only it's not within, it might be red if it's like danger and you're in combat and there's like another enemy approaching. So the yellow is kind of like somebody's investigating and red is like somebody's on you.
Okay.
And that happens, I think it's like all the time.
But so, even the presence of that is like a suggesting a like there are scales of interaction that Dark Souls in the past doesn't really suggest. Dark Souls is binary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's either someone's there or not.
Or
yeah.
don't interact, or someone's there or isn't there. And you're either avoiding killing, like whereas like there are just more shades of gray in what you can choose to do in Sekiro, where it's not always necessarily the case that you need to clear out a room. Like, I mean, it may be the case that like, you know, like sort of like boss runs and stuff like that will be like, there'll be ways where you can cleverly just like get around everyone to get to the, you know, fog door equivalent.
Yeah.
And just the fact that you have that ability to kind of dump in and out is, I don't know, I'm curious to see how, do you find that enemies, were they like chase after you? Like, were there consequences for being like, ah, okay, nope. Whereas like some enemies like, I'm actually going to follow you, asshole, stab you.
Yeah, to a certain extent. I mean, moving upwards is probably the best way to get away from people because you're out of reach, except for if they have an arrow, which I died to a lot.
I just know that 7 hours into this game, you're going to get
an
enemy ninja castle, and it's going to be filled with ninjas who can climb shit, and it's going to be like, I got to get out. Oh, fuck, he's up here on the rooftop with me, and it's going to be great. I can't
wait. No, this is my only thing. This is the one thing that's keeping me able to play this game. But you're probably right.
I'm probably right. Yeah.
I didn't see anything like that.
I wouldn't feel put it past in my blood.
You spent a long time trying to kill a fucking fish in this game, too.
I did.
Like, you were trying to cross a river. Not trying. The river was fine.
Oh, you can
the
swim river, in this game.
You can swim in this game. I know. I was going to start there. Yeah. And then I realized the only reason I'm asking that is because I watched for like a minute and a half where just this big ass fish is just hanging out being a big ass fish. It's got a health bar. It's not chomping at you. It's not going for your feetsies.
But I thought it was.
Your sword was slashing in its general direction over and over again.
Clearly, that's not the way to kill that fish.
No, someone asked for some fish scales. And so Natalie was trying to just get that request done.
I was trying to do a mission.
Is that actually true?
Yeah. There's a person like.
Okay, I didn't see that. I thought you were. Hmm?
Person's probably strong. Who knows what that thing is?
An entity.
There's an entity. There's a jar.
There is a jar who makes a request. And I tried to fulfill it.
I wonder if that jar is going to be the bird equivalent. Like the crow, the like shiny, shiny. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about from Dark Souls?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I could see. Or it like, drops you random items.
Right.
They could be like run the. Is that marked anywhere? There's not like a quest log in this game, right?
No.
Okay.
There's not. I'm trying to remember because I remember. No, there's not. There's
something
not.
Wild about that area is, and this reminded me of Neo, actually, is you get there, you teleported there.
Mm-hmm.
There's another thing that's interesting and I think is worth spoiling a little bit. So again, if you're like, I don't want any fucking spoilers, you probably have already you dipped out. All right. You've already probably used your grappling hook to zip away to the rooftop away from where we are. There are flashbacks in this game. There's a mechanism.
Wow.
Yeah. There okay. are, play it like, so that whole area where she's swimming around is the past.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Like
that's
maybe,
cool.
maybe without getting into the specifics of how you get there, yeah. you just like, oh, this is a thing that happened a few years ago.
Yeah.
It's and neat.
It. I don't know what happens. I didn't get to the end of that area. But
seemed like you got stuff there that you were bringing back into the future, right?
Yes. Yes. Hmm. I've specifically picked up a, yeah.
Like yeah. one of the shinobi tools or what? Oh. Buddy, sorry. Hi. Is there a package?
I think
here?
It might be my package.
Uh huh.
I'll come right back. Uh-huh. Sorry.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I've done some, by the way, just real quick, I've done some more research, and Patrick,
oh, yeah?
I think you're mostly right. There's a lot of noir-based games with question marks in the title. So, like, who shot Johnny Rock? That's a question mark. FMV game. Who is Oscar Lake? Also some sort of...
what?
Released internationally in 1995, developed by Jersey Cow Software. Who is Oscar Lee is widely regarded as the first hybrid adventure game / language learning tool. It's a simple point-and-click mechanics, liberal use of recorded speech, and mix of pre-rendered backgrounds with live-action video represents common development techniques of the 1990s. But there are some other ones. Some of them are also, like, things I don't think are questions because they're just proper nouns at this point. Like, who wants to be a millionaire? that's a question, technically.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's a proper noun.
Some of them are derived from other properties. So the Super Dimension Fortress Macross, Do You Remember Love, is named after the anime mecha film, Super Dimension Fortress Macross, Do You Remember Love, which is a great fucking name, but the video game came second, obviously.
Someone should steal that, though. Just take that.
Do You Remember Love is like...
That's a visual novel just waiting to happen.
So speaking of, there are some of those out here also, obviously. Things like... Do You Like Horny Bunnies? And Do You Like Horny Bunnies 2?
It's on Steam?
I think it predates Steam by like 15 years. I don't think they've been making hentai games for a long time, my guy. Here's what I really genuinely like. It's a card game, 12 different card games in here, and it's called Anyone for Cards? Which I really like.
That's good.
That's really good. I really like that one a lot. And then there are the ones that are made by, is this the same studio? I think it is. NIS, the like strategy and fantasy game company that made Disgaea, I want to say. They have Prinny, Can I Really Be the Hero? And What Did I Do to Deserve This, My Lord?
Yes.
Yes. And both of those are good. Prinny, Can I Be the Hero? And it's, I guess the full name is Holy Invasion of Privacy, Bad Man. Mm-hmm. What Did I Do to Deserve This, My Lord? And those are both pretty fucking good.
Those are great those are names.
I think those are PSP games.
I think those are both PSP started games. Out that way. Yes, totally,
yeah.
Totally.
Those are some of the best video game titles of all time.
Of all time, sure. Of all time. Just as a note, our friends over at Giant Bomb, on the wiki, there is a game titles that are also questions concept. That is where I should have, of course, gone to begin with.
Of course.
Of course they do.
There's a hidden objects game called Farum's Secrets. Where is Grandpa? Good. All right.
That's really good. That's God. A good question.
Mm-hmm. Where's Grandpa? Has anyone seen Grandpa? Just a new video game comes out tomorrow. Has anybody seen Grandpa?
First game that Microsoft announces for their new Xbox
yes,
platform.
God.
Where is
Grandpa?
Grandpa.
I'd like to know.
I'd love to know. Anyway.
Anyway, back to Sekiro.
Hell yeah.
What were we talking about? video games.
Oh, the fish and...
Oh, yeah, the fucking fish.
Swimming so, in the past.
I thought that this effort would be rewarded, and then I kind of figured that maybe I had to do some... There must have been... Maybe one of my... Maybe one of my peripherals is like a fucking fishing rod. Maybe.
Who like knows? A shuriken well, you get, or
I was
like,
gonna say you got we had shurikens in the E3 demo.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I don't think I didn't get to unlocking that yet. I got two prosthetics. Two prosthetics for my attachments to my prosthetic.
Yeah. I'm really curious, by the way, how that stuff is going to play out, both mechanically, because I think it's neat that there's like, hey, here are the tools I'm bringing out to battle. I want the flame vent and the axe and all that. But also like thematically and narratively, like mm-hmm. you don't get many disabled heroes in games. Mm-hmm. The FromSoft games, especially the Soul series specifically and Bloodborne, have always dealt with like disease and chronic illness in this way that we mm-hmm. don't – that are not – that are subtextual. Like, I don't think the way the stories are being told, most people who play through these games are not leaving it thinking about death and dying and yeah. terminal illness or disability. Like this, the word prosthetic is a word that has weight to it and means a specific thing. Like, it's not called his ninja arm. It's yeah. called his shinobi prosthetic. Prosthetics are real things. And so I'm just curious. And also, it seems like sickness will continue to be a major theme in this game. And so I'm curious what they're going to do with all that stuff. And also just like it's a game that takes place after a big war. The entire premise is like the clan that you used to work for is in disarray and falling mm-hmm. apart and people are getting sick. And that is like there's a lot there that can be really cool and that I am interested and intrigued to see if they what they do with it and how that all shakes out.
Me too.
I was trying really hard not to say shakes out or sticks the landing. I was trying really hard and I still fucking said shakes out. God damn it. Words. Crutches. Verbal crutches every fucking time. I should crutches, of course, the tool for people with disabilities and injuries. Very funny that I would immediately go there.
Do you find those? Oh, sorry, Natalie. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was gonna like sort of. Do you just like do the drops for these upgrades come just like, hey, you beat a boss, like now you got a flamethrower, or
no.
is it like rewarded for like the curiosity of like traversing the environment? Like how exactly? Because like I think it'd be really cool if you know. If you're exploring, you can find, like, maybe they'll end up doing this anyway, regardless of how they're doled out progression-wise, but that, like, you could find weird shit that you can do that the yeah. normal player will not find because you went and did some weird side quest or went around right. some corner.
Yeah, it is definitely more of the latter. It's not necessarily a quest line, but for, I can give you an example of how I found one of them with, it'll be a spoiler, though.
No, that's fine. Go ahead.
Okay, so spoilers. So while I was going through the Hirata estate, I like jumped the wall to this sort of like temple area that was like kind of like a some sort of like garden with like a temple in it, and there was someone there that was like standing in front of the door to the temple, and I approached them. And he immediately gave me sus vibes. And he was like, yo, this spot's mine, but I hear there's like a tower over there that is like supposed to be like pretty good too. But you might want to fuck off because this spot's mine. And then I wanted to fight him, but then I decided not to. So I left, and actually at that time I had already found that tower and had already explored it. So actually, that is not what happened.
What happened?
He told me that there was a tower, but that the tower was, there's, oh, this is a really good part, and I actually don't know if I want to spoil it, because it was really interesting in the context of being in a combative zone. And it has to do with sort of, Sekiro's take on NPCs, like the people that you see or that you talk to through doorways and things like that.
Hmm.
Huh.
So, okay. I actually won't spoil this. But,
cool. It sounds like there's a you do some shit. It isn't just I found it in a corner or I killed a boss.
No, it was it actually wasn't there. It was like in an area adjacent to it. Behind there's like a couple enemies.
You don't have to tell us what the thing is. I just
yeah.
The point is, like, you talk to a character, the character told you some stuff that eventually led you to the thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, in my gameplay, in my time with the game, mm-hmm. I encountered two mid bosses and I was unable to defeat either of them. So I have no idea if they drop something significant. Regular enemies. What's interesting actually is regular enemies. So instead of selecting, this is kind of a light mechanic spoiler. But instead of like pressing like search on a body and then like picking, like selecting like X and like grabbing the thing, you hold down a square and it just like whoosh and you just like pick up what's around you.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, it uses the term looped, which is
it does say that, which is weird because it's not like a loot game.
Mm-mm.
No, like you're not going to be getting weapons or like gear drops with a plus 15.
No,
but it's just like FromSoftware deliberately using the term. I just find it fascinating, even though like it doesn't ultimately mean that much. I thought it was when I saw that little bit pop up. I was like, huh, that's interesting.
So much of that makes me wonder what Activision's role is here as a publisher. Like, is that Activision localization being like, just it's loot, just say loot, or is that someone in FromSoft saying like, oh no, for this one we're willing to say the word loot? You know, it's interesting. The other thing that brought to mind for me, and watching all of this has done for me, is it's made me wonder what diehard Dark Souls fans are going to think about this game and Bloodborne fans, and whether or not for them. The samurai or the kind of like feudal Japanese version of Souls that they would want is more like Neo, because that's a game that has some other fucking loot in it. Mm-hmm. Like you plus three, you know, naginatas or whatever, right. Like all, and also where the combat is like Souls combat or Bloodborne combat, but like more intense in terms of having different stances and having to do this like key pulse. In order to get the maximum thing, you have to hit a button in the middle of combat to like breathe out, basically. Like there's all of that stuff in Neo that is really cool, but also very intense in a way that Sekiro seems a little more focused, a little bit more limited in terms of what you would be working with in a given fight than something like Neo, or like especially like character builds. Like this doesn't feel like a thing where you're gonna have, you might have your favorite weapons.
Yeah. But
I guess, I don't know. I didn't see the skill screen, so maybe I'm completely wrong.
Are you customizing the... Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No. Ask your question. I think I was about to answer it.
Oh, because Fashion Souls is like a big part of the other games. So you can maybe get to this, but I was just curious if like the actual aesthetics parts of the character is important in any way.
I don't remember if I picked up any aesthetic type or even like... gear or like armor or anything like that. I don't really remember. I don't think I did is my answer. But what I was going to say is I feel like the play style really lives in less in the weapon itself and more in the skills that you choose. And I think that's really interesting because I think it's almost more customizable because there are so many different skills that it's like an entire tree that you can equip, and you can only equip a couple at a time.
Okay. Just like the spinning slash that you talked about.
That is one of them.
And you're swapping between them all the time, or
you can swap between two.
Okay.
And same goes for the Shinobi prosthetic, is you can equip two of the prosthetic tools at one time. As far as I had unlocked so far. I don't know if you can equip more in the future, but for me, there were only two slots that I could put them in. So you're swapping between those. And what's interesting also about the Shinobi tools is they're all dictated by the same, currency is a weird word, but in terms of like the thing that you use to do the prosthetic is all one thing. So it's not like,
you have like ammo for all of your prosthetics.
Yes.
And your flame vent and your shurikens are drawing from the same pool.
Yeah, but even like one of the okay. So
I'll tell you the three we've talked about before on this podcast without spoiler warnings, as they've been showing them off for 6 months, 7 months.
Yeah.
It's the axe, the shurikens, and the flame vent.
Okay, so the axe is also dictated by this, which is interesting.
So like does that mean every time you use the axe it costs some of the ammo? Interesting. Okay.
I think that reinforces the idea that they are tools, that they are that they are means to something else, that they are augmentations or peripherals to enhance or to help or to facilitate your combat.
Right.
So I thought that was pretty fascinating, because the way that I always viewed sort of the secondhand weapon in Bloodborne was less, I don't know, it was like I was less engaged with it. And maybe that, I think what this does is it like, because it is like narrower and you're like, you are kind of not necessarily constrained, but you know, you're giving two set things, the prosthetic tool and your sword. And then you have like all these skills around you. But because of that, you need to engage with those two things, like to the ultimate degree. Like those are the I'm trying to find the word for what I'm trying to say, but it demands more attention of you.
Whereas like the gun was just for parrying in Bloodborne, for most of us. And there were spells that you could learn in Bloodborne, but I don't know anybody who, like, I think a lot of people, those games have that depth, but you have to go looking for it. You have to be willing to be like, I'm going to go learn how magic works in these games so I have a main weapon and maybe an offhand ability.
Yeah.
Whereas here, the example I'll use is the axe, which is like when you fight shield dudes, you can spend a point, you can spend ammo on your axe to fucking rip their shield away, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And that is like, oh, I'm engaged immediately because hitting them with a sword just doesn't work.
Yes, exactly. You won't get as far without engaging with that sort of stuff. And whereas in Bloodborne, it is like very much self-motivated if you want to make things deeper, or like if you want to like go into depth of like the sort of like peripheral systems, that is primarily self-motivated, is not as tutorialized. And I think Sekiro actually does a better job of tutorializing the skills, the Shinobi prosthetic, and even just the way that you move and like what you can do, just in a much more clear way, while still like it'll tell you and it'll give you opportunities to practice, but it will still be just as challenging even with the knowledge.
Some of these skills sound dope. Also, I found the section where you're flipping through these skills and it's like grappling hook attack and spin attack.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a thing that's like when an enemy tries to stab you with a spear, step down on the spear to stop the damage.
Oh, shit.
And
that's the one I should have.
Do a bunch of for that fight, I guess, the dude with the spear who fucks you up.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems like a good one.
Yeah.
For that fight.
Yeah. If only.
So yeah, the skill tree looks neat. There seems like there's cool shit here. I don't know. Yeah. I'm excited for it. When is it out?
March.
The 25th, I think. It's the end of the month.
March.
20 days is not that far.
22nd.
Wow, it's even closer. So
even
two
closer.
Weeks? Two weeks.
Yeah, we might get access to that game next week. Fuck.
Send that email right away, Patrick.
I got to hook up too.
Oh, you do have a hookup now. Wow, you're in the system. You're going to start getting emails. People are going to start sending you like big crates filled with giant standees because you sent the wrong thing back on an email once.
You made it.
I don't want that ever.
Too bad. Are you on the PAX email list yet?
Yep.
Are you getting all those emails?
Yep.
Great.
Yep.
Great.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's good. Is it actually? It's fine, is what I'll say. It is what it is.
Listen, I got an email today from I was like, oh yeah, I'll go play this game. So, you know.
Yeah, there's some stuff that I've seen that looks like really interesting.
Welcome to the games journalism for real. Yeah. What I'll say.
Pulling back the curtain a little bit here.
Emails.
Emails.
So yeah, do y'all
have anything else?
Any more questions for your resident Sekiro expert?
Let me tell you, you've played more Sekiro now than anyone on this call.
Wow. Correct.
That's correct. That's just
I played zero of it. I watched Austin play it.
You watched me play it. Let me just look here. Snow falling is pretty as hell. How did it feel to be big boy? Ask that. I wrote here, watching you play without being able to coach, single proud coach tier, as I watched. Here's an actual important note. This is really actually important.
Okay.
Now, have y'all played or watched Yakuza games?
Yes.
You know when you do like a heat action?
Yes.
Where you like do like the super powerful like finishing hit?
Yes.
And you go like, yo! Like, I can't believe you fucked that guy up so bad.
Yeah.
Sekiro is filled with moments where your dude is like, I'm going to stab you in the throat and blood is going to come out and slam you to the ground. And you go like, yo!
Yeah.
So I'm here for that. I'm ready to just be yelling in my room all the time.
Yeah, it's really tight. It's cool.
I think it's my last note, honestly. That's except for other spoiler shit that I cannot share.
No, yeah, but you can.
I briefly wanted to shout out, and I wanted. There's a character you meet. You get to spar with them, I'll say, and it was just what a good. You'll know who I'm talking about.
I missed
when you
this.
Play. Oh, I'll explain to you off air.
Okay, it's good.
Yeah, it's extremely funny.
Okay, everyone, go to the Sekiro group chat. We have to talk.
All right.
I'm glad we could have this conversation. I'll also be putting up a short impressions piece on editorial, which will have some of the stuff that we talked about here and some of the stuff that we didn't. So look forward to that. Who are we? We are Waypoint. You can follow us at Waypoint on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook at Waypoint Vice. And you can find us on the internet at waypoint.vice.com. Austin, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker, where I'll probably be tweeting about giant robots still. Oh, I'm going to shout out real quick. If you want to hear me talk about one of my favorite Gundam series, 0080 War in the Pocket, I guested on the Great Gundam Project, which you can find at the Abnormal Mapping Patreon. So go give that a listen. So it's like $1 a month to get access to their Patreon stuff because like you all listening, they are like young, poor, queer people. So they are like, yeah, just pay us $1 to get access to this stuff. It was really fun. I also shit talked another mecha show called Code Geass. Go listen to me talk about that and some other
Hell
shit.
Yeah. Patrick.
I got a plug for the first time in like forever.
Patrick, where can people find you and do you have anything to plug?
Nah, I'm just out here complaining that I got a kid because I can't rewatch Game of Thrones. So my complaints are small in the grand scheme of life over at Patrick Lupik.
You can find me at Natalie Watson. I already plugged my editorial piece, so that's my plug for the show. And we'll be back with a Waypoints, I think. Maybe it's a Be Good Rewatch It. I don't know what the first thing you're going to hear is, but we'll be back soon. Listen to our voices, and we appreciate you.
Suffer? Weep? Like, what's the hear our voices and
hear
weep.
Our voices and
Waypoints.
Be happy. Yeah. It doesn't have to all be suffering.
Yeah. Yeah. Hear our voices and be happy.
All right. I don't have Danielle here, so I'm going to... That's my new one. Hear our voices and be happy. Peace?
Peace. Peace?
Okay, I was waiting.
Question mark is my favorite game. Peace? Question mark?
Not usually.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.